Farma was the brand, the raw vegan queen.
It was such a great environment to work in. If none of this had ever happened, we'd probably still be working there.
On the surface, it seemed as though Sarma had it all. Books, fame, money, and a celebrity-favorite hotspot.
Owen Wilson used to just post up in the back and, like, walk through the kitchen. And I'm like, what is this place?
We were even at the restaurant in 2005 for a party celebrating raw food.
Feeling better in your skin, feeling more energetic, feeling happier. And it's hard to articulate, but that's the main benefit.
While things on the surface were great, she was struggling financially. And then she met her now husband, Anthony Strangis, on Twitter in 2011.
Sarma was telling me about a guy that she had been talking to online.
There were tons of conspiracy theories about why she married him. Was there some sort of blackmail involved?
Sarma says Strangis claimed to be ex-military and have a lot of money, something she says his own dad confirmed. She claims Strangis started to demand money from her so he could help her grow her empire, and things got really strange when he allegedly began exerting control over her, even making concerning claims that Sarma seemed to start to believe.
So I'm just supposed to do whatever you say and listen to your instructions and...
Yes, you signed on to this!
Sarma claims Strangis slowly took over the finances and employees eventually started reporting not being paid.
Some of the money coming from the restaurant business, it went straight to Anthony's pocket.
Welcome back, everyone, to Tax Crime Junkies. I'm your host, Dominique. I'm a CPA certified tax strategist. I have an interest in true crime. I have a degree in law and lead the American Institute of Certified Tax Planners. And with me today is my oh-so-lovable co-host, Tom Gorzinski.
Hey, Dom. I'm Tom Gorzinski. I'm an enrolled agent. I've admitted to practice before the U.S. Tax Court as a non-attorney. And I'm a tax instructor. And like you, I have a real interest in true crime. So we decided to create a true crime podcast to combine our love of mysteries, whodunits, and tax. We are the Tax Crime Junkies.
Today, we're about to delve into an intricate story that uncovers the stunning rise, dramatic fall, and the fascinating interplay of taxes, money, and veganism. So get ready for an immersive narrative that unravels the intricate dance between culinary zeal and financial turmoil. Tom, do you like raw vegan food?
I don't even know what that is. Is that like raw carrots and broccoli? Because if so, that's a hard no.
Well, how about tortilla wraps with spicy sun-dried tomato filling, corn cilantro, guacamole, tomato lime salsa, cashew sour cream, Brazil nut sea vegetable croquettes with tartar sauce, local sweet chili sauce, wild arugula, pink pepper, or how about falafel with tabbouleh? This stuff sounds amazing.
Okay, that actually sounds pretty good, Dom. I think I can see myself eating pretty much all of those items. And today's tale tells the sordid story of Sarma Melngalis, owner of the successful vegan raw food restaurant Pure Food and Wine. And I think that's the menu you are reading.
Yep.
Well, she literally rocked the New York City culinary scene once she met and married ex-con turned skilled con artist Anthony Strangis, also known as Shane Fox.
So Sarma Melngalis was the culinary mastermind behind the restaurant Pure Food and Wine, and that is what really put her on the map. But she wasn't just a restaurateur. She was an advocate for ethical living. She was a pioneer who dared to transform her culinary passion into a movement for better living and responsible consumption. But then you start to ask yourself, if she really lived a life so perfect, how did she end up the topic of our podcast?
That is true. We tend to not feature many perfect people on this podcast, Dom. But the story of Sarma is a tapestry woven with threads of culinary innovation, ethical aspirations, and financial realities. From the inception of Pure Food and Wine in the bustling streets of New York City to the challenges she faced in the world of finance and taxes, her journey is one that captures the essence of entrepreneurship in all its complexities. I know you're already curious, so let's dive into the unfolding event, shall we?
Imagine this, a woman named Sarma Melgalis, who seems to have all the ingredients for success. She was an Ivy League graduate. She earned a bachelor's degree in economics from the University of Pennsylvania, Wharton School. She had quite the impressive resume. She had experience at prestigious places like Bear Stearns and Bain Capital. But then, in a surprising twist, she left it all behind to follow her dreams to culinary school in France.
Hey, I appreciate someone who traces their dreams and gives up a prior career. I did that for mine. So after completing her studies, she took a bold step and opened Pure Food and Wine in June 2004 with her boyfriend at the time. After her personal and professional split from him, she took control of the entire company and its $2 million debt with the help of investor Jeffrey Chatero. This wasn't just any restaurant. It was New York City's first upscale raw food restaurant. Can you believe that? And it quickly made waves, garnering a spot on Forbes magazine's All-Star New York Eateries list. As if that wasn't enough, she expanded her ventures by introducing One Lucky Duck Juice Bar in 2010, which also blew up strategically and did very well for her.
But it didn't stop there. By 2012, she'd established a raw food production center and an internet sales office in Brooklyn, New York. She was making moves. She was taking her culinary passion to new heights.
You know, it's fascinating how Sarma seemed to spring onto the scene like she was a culinary shooting star. Her restaurant, Pure Food and Wine, wasn't just a restaurant. It was a movement, an embodiment of her passion for veganism and the innovation she brought to the culinary world. It's like she had this magical ability to craft dishes that tantalized even the most committed carnivores. People weren't just dining. They were experiencing something transcendent.
And let me tell you, at the height of its popularity, her restaurant Pure Food and Wine, along with the Lucky Duck takeout shop, was bringing in over $7 million in gross sales a year. Just think about that for a moment. It wasn't just a restaurant, as you said, Tom. It was this experience, and that brought in the celebrities. So it became a celebrity hotspot, a place that was frequented by the likes of Chelsea Clinton, Alec Baldwin, Woody Harrelson, Tom Brady, and Kyle MacLachlan. Imagine rubbing shoulders with those names in your everyday life.
And that's not all. Book deals came her way, in addition to her star-studded list of clientele. It seemed like she was living the dream, achieving recognition and success in a way that most could only imagine. So perhaps this is the secret behind how to make crazy profits in food. Because you know what they say about making a living owning a restaurant, Dom, right?
Well, I don't know what they say, Tom, but according to market research, restaurateurs make anywhere on average from $31,000 a year to $155,000 a year. So if you ask me, if you're trying to make a lot of money, I'm sure there are easier ways to do it. But I suppose if you want to make a caboodle of dough, being a celebrity hotspot, showing up on magazine covers, and having your own book sort of turn that business from a money pit to a cash cow. I remember reading about the reviews the restaurant received. And it wasn't just the critics who were singing her praises. It was the celebrities, too, of course. The restaurant was a hotspot for the glitterati, a place where stars not only enjoyed gourmet vegan fare, but also embraced the lifestyle that Sarma so ardently advocated. It was like an endorsement from a whole new dimension. Her story in particular seemed to embody the American dream, the tale of a driven entrepreneur who combined her passion with culinary expertise to create something truly extraordinary and wealth.
But you see, that's where the story takes a turn, because despite all the accomplishments, the recognition, and the money, something was brewing beneath the surface. A storm was on the horizon, and the picture-perfect facade was about to crack wide open.
You see, even amidst all the glowing reviews and the thriving restaurant, rumors started about the restaurant's finances. You know, what struck me the most about Sarma's journey is how she was so brilliant at the business part of her life, but eventually was ignorant about her personal life. That became her downfall. And her story evolved in such a roller coaster fashion. It's fascinating how her initial successes eventually gave way to this complex web of financial and personal challenges.
Think about it. Here was this restaurant that seemed to have it all. The reputation, the star power, the popularity. And yet still there were whispers about issues and concerns. People were speculating about how a place that appeared to be thriving on the surface could be facing these behind-the-scenes challenges. It's like the curtain was being pulled back on some glitzy facade, revealing something that no one could have guessed.
And you know how the rumor mill works. Once the speculation started, it seemed like everybody had their own theory. People were wondering whether the business model was sustainable. I mean, I admit that's the first thing that pops to my mind.
Right.
Are there hidden issues that weren't being addressed? It was this cloud of uncertainty hanging over what appeared to be an almost fairy tale success story. And sometimes just the fact that it appears to be a fairy tale leads people looking for ways to tear it down.
Now, here's where the plot takes an intriguing twist. Enter a fox.
You mean like the cute little red-haired animal?
Not quite, Dom. Like the proverbial fox. The cunning, the manipulative, those with an ability to outsmart predators and humans alike. The mythology of the fox, which is associated with trickery and deceit. After seemingly having it all, Sarma wanted a family. And she turned, like many people do, to social media. She noticed a frequent guest and Hollywood A-lister Alex Baldwin appearing to chat with a guy named Shane Fox.
You know, Alec Baldwin famously met his wife Hilaria at Pure Food and Wine. That was back in 2011. And he also became friendly with Sarma at the height of her success. So she probably knew about how they met.
And maybe that's why she was thinking she'd meet the man of her dreams this way too. So Shane Fox slides into Sarma's DMs.
I get it. And she sees his other activity, and it looks like he knows her friend Alec. So what's the harm?
Exactly. But Shane Fox was not Shane Fox. He was really Anthony Strangis, and he quickly pushed his way into Sarma's world and ultimately led to her downfall.
So he catfished her. He didn't even know Alec Baldwin, did he?
Exactly.
So their connection started with Twitter, but it wasn't until November in 2011 that they crossed paths in person, and that's when they got really close. Do you think Anthony Strangis knew who Sarma was and all she had built?
Well, we've certainly learned on this show that con artists always know what they are getting themselves into. It's why they do what they do. And moving forward, sometime in 2013, she formally introduced Strangis to the business. Now, she called him, quote unquote, Mr. Fox in front of the staff, a nod to the pseudonym he used on Twitter to woo her. The story becomes even more interesting when you learn that they tied the knot the following year with a New York marriage license stamped on December 5th, 2012.
Now that's where my spidey senses go up. You know, what is the rush and why are you getting married in secret without the most important people in your life surrounding you?
Right.
Unlike Sarma, who was the epitome of the American dream, Anthony Strangis was the complete opposite. He had a very shady past, and he was suspected of having minor psychological problems. But it looks like Sarma had no idea of that. She's still thinking he rubs elbows with celebrities.
How did these two vastly different worlds collide? It's a question that's been pondered by many people and in a documentary done later about their life. Yes, they actually had a documentary done about their life. Strangis' own stepmother expressed her confusion, asking a woman like her, what did she see in him? The puzzle pieces don't seem to fit, and that's what adds all the mystery to the story.
Even just looking based on appearances, Tom, I know we're not supposed to do that, but it does not seem like these two people are a common connection. Sarma is just simply gorgeous. She's a striking blonde. She's healthy. She's fit. And she's focused on both of those things. But Strangis, he appeared slovenly and he was not a vegan. Not to say that a non-vegan can't date a vegan, but it's just that when something is really part of your whole world, you know, she built this life around being vegan. It's just really surprising someone who has such different values belonged. So throughout the marriage of Strangis and Malngalis, he told her that she had to perform a series of tests. In addition to promising that he could make her and her beloved dog Leon immortal. But of course, this is not how things started out. He didn't start out promising that right away. And I think if you asked anyone who's been conned by a scammer or fooled by a cult, they don't start with their quirky ideas first. They build up to it, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like the idea of the frog in the boiling pot of water. The premise is simple. If a frog is suddenly put into a pot of boiling water, it's going to jump out and save itself from death. But if the frog is put in lukewarm water with the temperature slowly rising, it might not perceive any danger to itself and it will be cooked to death because it never notices as long as it's comfortable in its surroundings.
And it's only when that slow, gradual change suddenly starts accelerating does the frog realize it just signed its own death warrant. But by then, he already has lost his strength to jump out. Poor frog. Sarma, get out of the pot. Get out of the pot.
At first, it seemed they were working together. They embarked on collaborative efforts to steer her business forward. In his pledges, he assured her that a world of boundless resources would be at her disposal. With this, she could amplify her brand's reach across the globe, creating the long-awaited documentary that had always been a cherished dream. This documentary, the one capable of reshaping perspectives and driving the eradication of factory farming, became an emblem of her aspirations and her devotion to all of his ridiculous promises.
So essentially, Anthony Strangis painted a picture where Sarma could enact the world-altering changes that she had quietly dreamed of in her heart. We can see that with the movement of her restaurant and the prospect of extending help to those in need and preserving youthfulness in the process convinced her to buy into the entire facade that was promised by Anthony Strangis.
Once Malngalis and Strangis started getting romantically involved, the operations manager of Pure Food and Wine was dismissed. In his place, a younger individual took charge of the accounting responsibilities, a move that raised eyebrows due to the person's limited prior experiences. Strangis' influence over financial matters became evident as funds from Sarma's business flowed, no surprise, directly into his own pocket.
So it's sounding to me like he had this person take over because they were working together, or he knew this person didn't know what they were doing.
Right.
Something about that. And it's another twist that speaks volumes about their relationship dynamics, because Strangis didn't merely present a new financial arrangement. Instead, he used persuasion and intimidation, making it clear that if Sarma chose to halt his taking of her funds, the consequences would be dire. The threat implied that she could lose it all, everything that she held dear, if she did anything to the contrary.
He also told her all kinds of tall tales, like he was a former black ops and that he traveled all over the world.
And Strangis got his father to support this story and other lies, because the father told Sarma he was a Navy SEAL and got shot in the line of duty. So he's saying this about his own son. That's kind of bolstering these lies. You'd never think like your boyfriend's dad would make up stories. And later, Anthony's ex-wife, Stacy, also told a similar story that her father-in-law, who was a Massachusetts police officer and on the side a passionate gambler, they allegedly corroborated his narrative to a T. There was even a point when the ex-wife Stacy believed Anthony had been shot in the chest, only to find out that the bandages were just taping his man boobs down. I feel like I've heard these kinds of stories before, Tom. Not necessarily the man boobs, but men in particular seem infatuated with claiming they are special forces and CIA. How about go out and get a job, man?
Right. And Sarma said Anthony was always very mysterious about who he was, what his occupation was. He made her think that he was involved in some sort of black ops activity. You know, the stuff that's under the radar, that nobody writes about, that's off the books, unofficial. That's because he would often travel for lengthy periods without prior notice and allegedly never really answered any of her questions directly, making her feel as if she shouldn't even try to dig deeper for the sake of her own protection.
Oh, no. I hear stuff like that, and I'm going even deeper. That makes me dig even deeper to find out what's going on. The most believable aspect, though, Sarma implied, was that his computer was very password protected. So she would walk in the room, and he'd immediately hide something. That sounds like a cheater if I ever heard of one. So on his laptop, there was like a seal. It kind of looked like maybe it was a seal from the CIA or something official. And he had to put in a passcode to even get into the computer. She saw him reviewing drone footage and was in his car while he procured a manila envelope full of diamonds. And that was supposed to be some sort of evidence. So Sarma believed everything, and she felt like the stuff she was seeing was backing up this claim that he was some sort of officer.
So over time, things evolved in their relationship. Not only is Strangis a con artist, but he's messing with Sarma psychologically through complex commitments, power dynamics, and financial entanglements. His promises of immortality and global influence, entwined with his control over her financial matters, created a narrative that straddles the line between ambition and manipulation. This story, with its twists and turns, highlights the depths to which individuals can be driven when ambitions, love, and coercion intersect in the most unexpected ways.
It was Strangis, say the authorities, who began spending Sarma's money. From January of 2014 to January of 2015, he transferred over $1.6 million from business accounts to her personal bank account at his request. He allegedly spent nearly $1 million of those funds at Foxwoods Resort Casino in Connecticut. He spent over $200,000 at the Mohegan Sun Resort Casino and over $80,000 at specialty watch retailers, including Rolex and Bayer, over $70,000 at hotels in Europe and New York, and over $10,000 on Uber car rides. According to authorities, Stranges also withdrew hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash. Wow, $10,000 in Uber rides? Where was he going, crossing the Sahara?
Well, he began to fall short of cash. I guess that happens when you take $10,000 in Uber rides. There's not a huge margin in food service. She was actually unable to pay the restaurant's 98 employees for nearly 5 months. During those months, Mangaldas and Stranges provided excuses and promises, but no money. When paychecks bounced in January of 2015, the staff had had enough, they refused to work anymore, and the business closed. Benjamin Dichter, who represented many of those employees in a lawsuit against Sarma, reportedly referred to her as, get this, the vegan Bernie Madoff.
I'm just shocked that people continued to work for 5 months without getting paid. I'm shocked. You'd think it would be 2 weeks and they're gone. But I think that also just kind of shows the dedication of the restaurant staff as well to the movement of veganism, right? They were
just that good.
Absolutely. So as the outcry reverberated, Sarma opted to address the escalating turmoil via a blog post. So by February of 2015, she issued a public apology, and she did it, you know, on her blog, and it seemed like she was genuinely remorseful. But a little later, she erased that post altogether. Now that I'm looking back and I know the whole story, I kind of wonder if Anthony Stranges had anything to do with erasing that blog post.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Subsequently, in an interview done later that year, Sarma wove a different narrative altogether. She revealed a side of the story that had laid hidden beneath the surface. She was in so much debt. She even confessed to grappling with missed rent payments. But here's where the story takes a turn. Amidst the whirlwind of unrest and explanations, Sarma offered her employees a version of events that diverged from the one she shared with the world. In a deft maneuver, she pointed the finger at the banks, attributing the situation to a shift in banking partners.
For 5 months, not paying? I don't know. I'm wondering if they bought it. But we do know that the workers walked out in January of 2015. They hadn't been paid. And so the restaurant closed. And with the closed restaurant, actually Sarma was nowhere to be found. So it's like the employees closed down the place. Sarma later resurfaced and she told Well and Good in February that the restaurant had a complicated history and had suffered under debt since its founding.
Now, Sarma said, quote, people from outside see a busy restaurant and they assume I must live in a huge penthouse, and it could not be more opposite. There are plenty of times I have not been paying my own rent to make payroll, unquote. The chef blamed part of the debt on the expense of her ingredients, and she said she wished she was more communicative.
So closed in January, it reopened, the restaurant that is, in April, and they had a new investment. But trouble struck again and the restaurant closed in June.
After reopening for several days in July 2015, it has not operated again since. With Sarma in hiding, her phone was disconnected and she did not respond to media requests for comment on the employee situation.
Her phone was probably turned off because she didn't pay the bill. So here we are standing at a crossroads of a story that seemed too surreal to be true. Imagine walking by Pure Food and Wine one day, and lots of people said it was their favorite restaurant, and you suddenly notice a closed sign hanging on the door. And that's after not getting paid or having your paycheck bounce for 5 months. That's what happened in 2015. And that's a year that's really a part of the employees' memories because they're not going to forget that. And it could easily be the end of our story. But as you know, if there wasn't even more intrigue in this plot, we most definitely wouldn't have chosen this story.
Absolutely true. So moving forward, when Sarna decided to reboot the business, she asked for help. Her former patrons obliged. However, she eventually managed to get funding. According to the Brooklyn DA's office, four people paid Melgalis a total of $844,000 as an investment, and she reopened her Brooklyn location.
So as a way of kind of keeping her investors placated, Sarma told them that she was negotiating a sale of the business to a man named Michael Caledonia. I was wondering that. How does she get more investor money if the business is failing and shutting down and payroll's bouncing? So she's saying, hey, just give me this bridge loan. I've got a guy, Michael Caledonia. But here's the thing. According to the indictment, Michael Caledonia turned out to be Strangis in disguise.
I'm not really surprised by that. Behind the scenes, authorities say after reopening, Sarma transferred an additional $400,000 from the business account to her personal account. She reportedly withdrew over $100,000 in cash, transferred over $300,000 to the Foxwoods Casino on behalf of Strangis, and charged nearly $25,000 in other casino locations. And because of all those withdrawals, there was a lack of funds in the business account, which led to, guess what, more bounced paychecks, which led to, guess what, another lawsuit by the employees.
So that's what happened in July. And of course, by that time, the business shut down for good. And not only had Sarma and her corporations not paid their employees, but, and this is where the tax connection comes in, they had also failed to pay the government. So the state of New York in particular claimed that Sarma and her companies failed to turn over more than $400,000 in sales tax. And here's how this works with sales tax. You collect sales tax from your customers when you sell something. We've all paid it. It's not really the total that we're told. They add sales tax and then we pay the final amount. But the person who's collecting it, the vendor, it's not their money. So Sarma's collecting all this sales tax money and it's not hers. You have to hold it in trust until you turn it over to the state. In this case, it was the state of New York. So not only was Sarma stealing from her employees and from her investors, she was also stealing from her customers and the state of New York. And that's really a serious crime. We start to step up in the ladder here of how bad the crime is. But it can get worse. And things were about to take an even more interesting turn because she disappeared. Sarma disappeared and her boyfriend, Anthony Strangis, nowhere to be found.
After the bankruptcy of her entire business, Sarma Melgalis and Anthony Strangis, they just simply disappeared, leaving the public clamoring for answers. Where is she? The couple who had been celebrated as the driving force behind Pure Food and Wine seemingly evaporated into thin air. It's the kind of twist that makes you wonder if you accidentally flipped a few pages in the story. Because how could everything just change so drastically and abruptly?
Yeah, it was quick. Sarma and Anthony Strangis weren't around to answer the questions that people had. So all of these things that we're speculating about, they're nowhere to be found. By this time, Sarma Mangalas has been labeled by the media as the vegan fugitive. You mentioned the vegan Bernie Madoff, and people were imagining she's hot-footing it together with her boyfriend away from New York. And actually, they were. They were on the run. They went from Louisiana, Las Vegas, that should probably be no surprise. And eventually, they landed in the cozy interior of a Fairfield Inn in rural Tennessee. All around the country on the run.
As the news spread, so did speculation. People whispered about financial troubles, personal crises, and a myriad of other reasons for this unexpected turn of events. And with every passing day, as the silence from Sarma and Anthony persisted, everyone's curiosity really deepened.
So get this, they disappear after the restaurant suddenly closed down. No explanation. The employees are just left to fend for themselves. And for a while, nobody really knew where they were. It was like they vanished into thin air. So those whispers of financial troubles got louder, and there were rumors that they owed a lot of money to creditors, but nobody knew exactly what was going on. And the story of the so-called power couple gets even more bizarre from there.
Were they caught? Did they evade arrest? Did Sarma Mangalas eventually make a comeback with Pure Food and Wine? And how did a Domino's pizza order to a hotel room in Tennessee take down the famed chef? Tune in to the next episode and find out what happened.
That's a wrap for today's episode. We hope you enjoyed diving into the riveting story of Sarma Mangalas. It's truly fascinating how her journey from a respected figure in the vegan community, brilliant chef and entrepreneur, to a seemingly gullible fugitive on the run, seeking immortality for herself and her dog. This story captivated headlines and sparked discussions about ethics, trust, and the complexities of the wellness industry.
Thank you for listening. We're super grateful you decided to join us today, and we hope you consider subscribing to the show and even sharing it with some friends who could use a tax crime junkie podcast in their life. Help us spread the word and come back for more.
We hope you'll join us again next week as we continue our story on Sarma Mangalas and continue our mission to find the loopholes that went left and close them for good. Until next time, remember that every crime has a trail that leads to the truth.